Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Lots to get through today. Later on in the programme, Jules and Ali will be here to reflect on good results for both Atleti and Real Madrid. Mina here as well to talk about Inter one step closer to winning the title. Speaking of one step closer to winning the title, in England, that's exactly where Manchester City stand after a 2-0 victory against Crystal Palace today. If Liverpool beat United tomorrow, then it will be Manchester City will be crowned Premier League champions. Meanwhile, Chelsea with a 2-0 victory over Fulham puts them very much in the driving seat to take that fourth Champions League place. Let's welcome in, shall we, Frank LaBeouf and Craig Berlier with us. Craig, let's start, shall we, with City's win against Crystal Palace. Pretty forgettable, I suppose. Kun Aguero is the big story. A great goal for him.
Yeah, the drama unfolding around Europe is tangible. A little reminder there from Aguero. Obviously, two quick goals in the second half, Dan. Many changes for City, as expected, ahead of the return leg against PSG, which is far from done. So no surprises, he shuffled the pack completely. But yeah, you're right. A little reminder there that you know, great ball into him from Mendy. Typical Sergio Aguero, one touch out his feet and then smashes it into the roof of the net. And whilst I think we know he won't start in midweek, you know, we saw him in the Carabao Cup final for those people that watched that. And you and I were laughing as he stood and warmed up on the touchline, which seemed to be forever when the game was at 0-0. And he kept looking to the bench and saying, you do realise this game needs a goal. And so, you know, I think from him going into this midweek fixture, which could be huge, you just don't know. I think we'll still see him on the bench, but I think a little nudge and a wink to Guardiola to say, listen, I know I'm leaving at the end of the year, but if you need me against PSG, you know I can deliver.
It's not a bad person to call on, is it, Frank? As Craig says, you can't imagine this goal today will completely change Pep Guardiola's mind and he'll start against PSG, but not a bad person to have on the bench.
Of course not. I mean, he's a legend. He scored, I think, 258 goals or 259 goals for Manchester City. He showed that that is very useful when he's on the field, and he's still. And today he was a fantastic control and a good shot. And it's a 1-0, and it's the beginning of a win for Manchester against Crystal Palace. But yeah, I agree with Craig. I think, and I agree with you. I think I don't think it's going to change Guardiola's way of thinking about the next game, and I don't think Aguero is going to be on the field against Paris Saint-Germain. But he's a real option, and it's at some point he needs to get a goal. Yeah, we can see maybe Aguero coming on.
He could go pretty much anywhere, couldn't he, Craig? In the summer, he still clearly got it.
Oh, absolutely. Obviously there's no transfer fee, and so it'll be wages, which, you know, you can still demand a big salary. Obviously, that will be driven by the budgets of the pandemic and the problems that that's caused clubs. But there'll still be people willing, I would imagine, to shell out maybe on a year or two contract for him, come in, pay him big bucks for 12 to 24 months and get him to do a job. I mean, I don't know who that is, but I would certainly still have him around my club, around my side. For example, I don't think it will happen, but had he been in that Chelsea side in recent weeks, I think he would have had a barrel load.
Yeah.
I still think clearly he's good enough. I mean, he's had a few problems this year with injuries, had an issue with COVID as well, so it's been far from ideal. But no, it's going to be interesting to see where he goes, but he's far from finished when you see some of the people plodding around some of the clubs in Europe still getting a game as a front man.
City then, as I say, one step closer to the inevitable title. Meanwhile, for Chelsea, a lot on the line today regarding the top four, with Leicester, of course, dropping points as well, Frank. A big win for them today, and they did it, as we said, with the City team, with very much the B-side, if you like. Kai Havertz making a big difference.
Yes, he did. He did, and very well served by Mount, especially on the first goal, which is an absolute magical control for Mason Mount and a great pass for him. But Kai Havertz had a very good game, and I'm very happy for him that he could score two goals. But it's true that Chelsea wasn't very dominant, but they did what they know how to do, being solid. We shouldn't forget what Mendy did, especially in the first half, where he had three fantastic saves. But it's what they're good at. you know, they pass the exam every Saturday and every Wednesday. We can be critical, say, yeah, they could have been, they could have done more, they could have been more clinical, but they do it, and they keep on winning, so nobody should complain about that. And Fulham did well, worked hard, you know, pressed them in the first 8-10 minutes, and then they scored the goal, and it was almost over. So it wasn't a perfect Chelsea, like I think it never been since Tuchel took charge, but it's an effective one. Who keeps on winning and keeps on having results. So, yeah, happy.
Could Havertz start instead of Werner, Craig?
Yeah, I mean, I think that will be the only one, Dan, that will be up for debate. He'll probably, I don't think anybody was booked or nobody's going to be suspended anyway. You can't be suspended, sorry. Unless you got a booking in this game, you could be suspended for the final. So I wouldn't see him changing anything really apart from that. That's maybe some food for thought, because as you know, we talked about it in midweek after the draw away in Madrid, is that the lifeline for Real and Zidane is that, one, they have a natural finisher in Benzema, and two, that if Chelsea don't take their chances and Werner missed the sitter in the first leg, then that could be the one downfall for Chelsea getting to the final. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. I mean, Havertz, when he has played there recently, that's looked his most comfortable position. Mm. He's really struggled to find his feet at Chelsea, playing wide, playing a little deeper. And the last couple of times he's played there, you know, albeit against, you know, Palace and Fulham, he's played a lot better. The other side of the coin here is Fulham's problem, in a nutshell, was as good as the goal was. You know, if that had been Frank Leboeuf playing centre-back and a ball had travelled 60 yards and came down with snow on it, you wouldn't let a striker just control it as brilliantly as he did and then play a pass. You know, just a few years ago, one of those centre-halves would have absolutely melted him.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was Fulham's issue in a nutshell. But Mount, it was great control from him. He's been fantastic. But, yeah, I see that as the only, when the team sheet comes out in midweek, I really think that's the only question mark in terms of what Thomas Tuchel will do, because, you know, Pulisic is going to come back in, Mount's going to go back further forward, the midfield's going to go back to how it is, and the wing-backs, Azpilicueta, I would expect, would come back in. So, yeah, that's going to be an interesting one, because that could be the area that potentially costs them if they don't take their chances.
Craig, why would he stick with Werner, considering what we've seen?
Well, you're just always waiting in the... sorry, Frank. You're just always waiting in something changing. You know, waiting in it clicking. Clearly, he's got a body of work that has been successful in Germany. And it's been a struggle in the main part here. The answer would be, what, for the reasons that I gave, and also he hasn't got complete trust in the other players in that position. So, right. you know, have you got a Sergio Aguero in there who's natural and putting the ball in the net, then it's pretty much a no-brainer. But he hasn't really got that. He's flirted with Havertz. He's flirted with Giroud. He clearly doesn't fancy Tammy Abraham. And so had he a proper 30-goal man up front who was in form, Werner just wouldn't play.
What would you do, Frank? If it's Havertz or Werner up top against Real Madrid, who would you play?
Tough question. I will still go for Werner, because, I mean, if you put him on the bench, I'm afraid you can lose him for the rest of the season, because I think he's so down in matters that he doesn't score a goal. He keeps on doing things, very interesting things, you know, the assist that he gave, the last action when he kept the ball and got a free kick at the edge of the box. He just has a lack of confidence, but he keeps on trying. He doesn't give up, and I like the fact that he's still up to anything and tries everything. But why I would choose him as well? Because I think against players like Varane, for example, you need somebody smaller who can disturb him, who can be fast, and this is the case of Werner instead of Kai Havertz. But let's say that I don't really care about that. I'm more concerned about Ziyech. And if Ziyech plays, why doesn't put him on the right side? I don't understand. I saw him today very frustrated when he went out. playing in like a number 10, and I really don't think it's his real position. He really has to think, I'm talking about Tuchel, that Ziyech has to play on the right side. He's where he's the best. It's like Mahrez. He's a real copycat of Mahrez, and I don't see Mahrez playing anywhere else. And I don't see Guardiola putting Mahrez in another position that's not on the right side.
Dan, I think, obviously I agree with that. And Ziyech coming on in his left foot, I don't think he'll play. But I think the real reason why Werner will get the nod, and Frank talked about the speed, but I think whilst it's frustrating when you're missing chances like he is, the fact he's still making the very good runs, the fact that he's still stretching defenders, the fact that he's taking them away into the poor areas, is allowing space and will allow space for the likes of Mount and the likes of Pulisic to make runs and operate and get somebody far from the midfield. So he has got other facets of his game. I mean, it's clearly different from Kai Havertz. He's more of a link-up player. But whilst Werner is making those defenders chase into the corners and making good runs, he's creating space for others. And I think whilst one part of his game is frustrating, that's the other part of his game that's still operating. And I think that's probably the reason why Thomas Tuchel will have him in the starting 11.
Great stuff, guys. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Just a reminder, plenty of video content over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to go there and subscribe to ESPN FC.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Meanwhile, in Spain, a very good day if you had Madrid in your name. Atleti with that 1-0 win against Elche. Meanwhile, Real Madrid beating Osasuna 2-0. We're welcoming Julien Laurent and Ali Moreno to reflect on those two results that very much keep both sides in the title race. Ali, let's start, shall we, with the ending of the Atleti game. Atleti 1-0 up, concede a penalty, though, in the 91st minute. The penalty hits the post. However, the replay shows that Oblak is off his line. However, I don't think I knew this until today, that because he doesn't actually make the save, the penalty doesn't have to be retaken. Atleti go on to take all 3 points. Barcelona Real Madrid fans very angry.
Yep, and what a wrinkle in the law that is. Yeah. What a loophole. Now, can I just tell you, from the perspective of the attacking player, the penalty taker, if indeed Jan Oblak is off his line, he is closing down the angle. So I can make the argument that because he is closer to me, I feel like maybe I have to get it closer to the post. Is that not a logical thought that maybe, okay, if I'm going to get it past him, I have to get it tighter, closer to the post? And maybe if you don't hit it as tighter to the post, then maybe Elche score the goal, they tie 1-1, and then Real Madrid fans and Barcelona fans are happy. Regardless, just before we keep talking about the penalty and the game, let me just say something. Marco Llorente, what in the world are you doing?
Yes.
Honestly, he went full-on Superman on committing the handball and then tries to pretend as if there was some touch on his head. And after he had scored the potential game winner and ended up being the game winner, you may have thought, you know, he will be the hero of this game because Atletico Madrid was struggling to get a result against Elche. And then he just goes, and I mean, full-on Man of Steel Superman. There we go. Yeah, touch that hand. And somehow Atletico Madrid escaped, just like they did against Alaves back in March, where a late penalty and Jan Oblak made the save. Then, late penalty here off the post, and now somehow Atletico Madrid got 3 points.
I love it. Llorente going down holding his head, as you say, Ali, as if he'd been fouled during his Superman escapade. Jules, what did you make of the penalty?
Yeah, I mean, I knew the rule, and I think that in a way it's a fair rule. It's like if you miss the target and you shoot wide, and even if the keeper is off his line, you're not going to retake that penalty. And I guess as hitting the post is not considered being a shot on target, you can understand why in the rules it's the same, you don't retake it as well. Although I can understand Real Madrid and Barcelona fans and Sevilla fans and Elche fans not being happy with the rule. But I just think Atleti have no margin, and Ali is right. Many times this season we've seen them dropping points late, and even last weekend against Athletic Bilbao when they could have had a point and yet they conceded late. Often they've done that because they don't take the chances earlier on like they had today, and then the margin is so tight, and then when they keep dropping and dropping to defend their lead, very often they get pegged back as well, and they were very lucky today to get that win.
Meanwhile, for Real Madrid, goalless for much of the game against Osasuna. You kind of thought, oh, here we go again, more drop points, another 0-0. But in the end, they got it done, Ali.
They got it done, but it's just for Real Madrid. And I mean just. Right now, Zinedine Zidane is keeping this team together with duct tape. That's about it. He's like holding pieces here, holding pieces there. Reminds me of that cartoon back in the day where the dam is breaking and there's water coming everywhere and you just kind of stretch in every single place trying to cover all the holes that you can. Well, that's what Zidane is right now with Real Madrid. It seemed like a 0-0 game. It looked like a 0-0 game. It felt like a 0-0 game. And Eder Militao, of all people, comes in and scores a header. Actually, he had couple of chances earlier on in the game as well. And the second goal by Casemiro is an excuse me finish, one that he will take, but one that he did not mean because he took a horrendous touch on the ball and somehow it worked out. But if you're Real Madrid, you don't care about any of that nonsense. You care about the 3 points because as we have seen for Atletico Madrid, for Barcelona, and for Real Madrid, getting 3 points right now, it is hard, hard work. So you take it whichever way you can.
How was Hazard? He played 72 minutes, Jules.
He wasn't great, Dan. We have to be honest here. He played central, which one I don't think is his position, despite his good understanding with Karim Benzema and the way they try to link and play together. But yeah, he's short of match fitness, clearly. Of course he is after the last injury, but all the injuries as well. The problem is a lot of the creativity from the team relied on him, more maybe than Asensio and Vinicius, who both played wide, and he didn't provide it. Hence, no one else provided it. That's why all the chances came on set pieces. And Militao could have had a hat-trick of headers today only on set pieces. And I never thought I would say that, but Eder Militao was the best player on the Real Madrid team today and man of the match as well at the end. But it was not enough in creativity from Hazard, from the other attacking players. And yet, they won't look at the performance Real Madrid and Zinedine Zidane, but they will just take the 3 points for now and move on to the Sevilla clash next weekend and the Chelsea one, who are huge games that can define their season between now and the end of the next weekend.
Yeah, Jules completely right, obviously. Two massive games. Did we learn anything today? Did Zinedine Zidane learn anything today that would help him going to the Chelsea game, Ali?
The best thing that could have happened to Zidane and Real Madrid today is that you did not have to rely on Toni Kroos, you did not have to rely on Lucas Modric, that they will be, on paper at least, fresh and indeed ready to go against Chelsea. And it's a risk that Zidane took, but it's also a risk that he needed to take, because what we have seen is that the legs are going, and they're going quick for all of these guys, and certainly the guys in the midfield three of Casemiro, Modric, and Cruz. So the fact that he was able to save those guys, I think, helps them facing Chelsea in the midweek.
It is tight in Spain. We all know as well. It is tight in France at the moment as well. Both Lille and PSG registering victories on Saturday. Lille with a 2-0 victory over Nice. Meanwhile, PSG being long by 2-1. Jules, 3 games to go and no one is blinking yet.
No, you're right. PSG didn't play well but beat Lens at the Parc des Princes 2-1. Lille played better but didn't really have to force the talent either because Nice were not good enough for them and won that 2-0. And then Monaco and Lyon play tomorrow, which is the big game, especially for Monaco, who can potentially drop points in a game like this against Lyon. Mm. And then we go again next weekend. Lens, who played PSG today, will also play Lille next weekend in a big North derby. And then they will also have to play Monaco. So they're very much the referee of this incredible title race. But it looks like Lille are strong enough mentally, where certainly they were today, to not drop points, to stay in the lead. And PSG are chasing, and they're the hunters, and Lille the hunted. But Lille so far are doing well to keep that top place in the table.
No Mbappe in the starting 11 today, Jules.
No, Mbappe, no, he's got a little calf tightness, Ali put it before we recorded the show, and he's right. I think they didn't want to take any risks. They knew that they should beat Lens really without Kylian, and that he has to be as ready as possible for Tuesday night against City, more than at the game for the weekend. So they rested him, he was in the stands. Same with Paredes, same with Florenzi, who are expected to be back as well for the City clash, because that's what it matters now for Pochettino and the players. It's the City game on Tuesday night.
Mbappe, please, Jules, come on. You're not friends with Kylian Mbappe. You to call him Kylian, I think we just need to get that straight.
It's just not to repeat Mbappe all the time, you know, but him and I, you know, we're cool. We're cool with each other.
How are you feeling looking ahead to that clash, Jules?
I don't know. I want to be hopeful. And I think there's a little chance, there's always a chance in football. And PSG have been excellent away from home in the Champions League, at United, at Barcelona, at Bayern Munich. So you could see them doing something good there. However, I see City, and again today with a reserve team at Crystal Palace, and they're too good, and they've been too good for the last 4 months. And then I think, well, PSG, they have to win 2-0. I can't see this one happening, or 2-1, and then you go to extra time. But it would be tough. They will have to physically be much better over the whole 90 minutes than they were in the first leg, where they only lasted 60, really, 55. I don't know if they're capable of that, if that's possible. Do you go 4-2-3-1 and really go all guns blazing? Do you play a bit more cautious at the beginning and you can still change it in the second half, for example? It's a tough one for Pochettino and for the players. But I want to hope and I want to believe that they can do something special.
Ever the optimist, Julien Laurent. Of course, we'll be looking ahead to those games in much more detail over the upcoming days. Be sure to join us on the next show. Of course, tomorrow, the focus very much on Manchester United against Liverpool. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. It will be Borussia Dortmund against Leipzig in the German Cup final. A very comfortable win for the hosts. Let's welcome in then Jan-Arge Fjortoff. Jan, watching this game, I was thinking, how on earth did Holstein Kiel knock out Bayern Munich?
Yeah, and it was an unbelievable game because it was all decided in the first 30 minutes, more or less. And they played Holstein Kiel, and we think, well, this is just a lower league playing there. As you're saying, they knocked out Bayern Munich. They have conceded less goals in the second league. They have games in hand that will put them on automatic promotion from the Zweite Liga in Germany. So it was like an unbelievable game. Dortmund had so much fun scoring goals, creating chances.
Gio Reyna's, of course, bagging a brace, and he's had an interesting season, of course, started off strong, and then has been struggling for game time. Obviously, two big goals for him today.
Yeah, what a player he is. And I think that what you get with Dortmund, I think that is the strength and the weakness to the team, because you have these young players, they will have spells where they will do well, and then they will have some dips going down, but you still have to trust them getting back in the game. And it's just unbelievable to follow him at Bellingham, who has taken his position, having so much, he's so much better now in the start of the season. And it was great to see Reina get those two goals today, and good goals as well.
Yeah, very nice finishes indeed. And it's the final that we kind of wanted from a neutral's point of view. Leipzig against Borussia Dortmund. So many subplots going into that game, Jan.
Absolutely. And well, we was very tight yesterday, but now we have the final. But I think for Dortmund now, the real final will be against Leipzig next Saturday or the next weekend. Yep. When they play each other in the league. That's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see also how RB Leipzig now do that into that final, because you saw Julian Nagelsmann. He would love to walk into that dressing room of Bayern with at least one trophy, with all these players sitting around there with so many trophies. And for Dortmund, they will have to save the season to get maybe a title and again top four in the Champions for the Champions League places. So this is the dream final. And as you're saying, two clubs that they need a trophy, and Dortmund haven't done it since Tuchel did it and then was fired. No, Terzic can do the same and leave his post where Marco Rosa comes in.
As we mentioned, no Erling Haaland. He was on the sidelines for this game, out with an injury. However, his name is all over the newspapers in Spain after Minarola, his agent, gave an interview with AS. Lots of interesting clippets, including what we know today is that Dortmund spoke seriously with us and told us we aren't selling him. Now, we have to see if that's their wish until September the 1st. That's Dortmund's official position. But I have another position. I think that if a good opportunity comes up and everyone is happy, we'll put it on the table. Why is he talking, Jan?
Well, his dad is not talking. We just know things in that. I don't think there's any news in what he's saying. First of all, this is Raiola. This is how he do his players. He do that with Pogba, with Zlatan, with everyone. And in Spain, they love that. And after the Super League now, they were talking about they couldn't afford him and these things are going. Status is now for Erling Haaland has been all there before, that Dortmund don't want to sell him. Everybody know that maybe there will be a new dynamic if they don't get into the Champions League, but they are desperate to keep Erling Haaland. And mind you, it's Dortmund who decide if he will go or not, not Raiola. Mm. Having said that, he's had wishes before, have them fulfilled, but there's nothing new to report on Erling Haaland. And Erling Haaland is on fire. You saw that against Wolfsburg. There's nothing in that he will kind of lose his form at the end of the season. Now he will be there to get him in, maybe get that title and that top four position.
We're talking huge numbers, obviously, when it comes to Erling Haaland, 180 million plus. So why are the Spanish clubs even involved with talking with Raiola when they don't have any money? They've told us already, Jan, that they have no money. They're going to go bust in a couple of years if a Super League doesn't come along. So surely they haven't got that sort of money, just down the couch, that maybe they could use to buy Haaland.
Well, you mean that the club that loved to have Super League to survive and be in the business and then spend 180 million euro to get Erling Haaland, or those kind of clubs?
Yeah.
I think that the thing is, with we can talk about investors, we can talk about 50 plus one, that is the ownership in Germany, but in Spain is something else. This is the big precedents have to show what's possible. And I think sometimes when you've heard Perez lately, it reminds me of that adventure of the king who is naked and nobody wants to tell him you're naked. And I think that's the feeling we get with Perez at the moment. And I think that when you kind of add the Raiola in his position as the most well-known, most famous agent in the world, you have the Spanish press who are always BS to the different kind of clubs and to the presidents and to the big people there, these kind of story will happen. I think when, Dan, you had a go at me last year because we talked a lot about Sancho, I got a feeling that this transfer window, we're going to talk a lot about Erling Haaland. There will be deadlines. There will be money involved. There will be people trying to get him out. And Dortmund, they will say he will stay, he will stay, he will stay. And then we'll see if Raiola's, well, maybe they have another position. 1st of September will happen. This is going to be a fun summer, I guess.
It's going to be good for your bank manager, Jan. You'll be on every day talking about him.
Yeah. Twitter, we'll see. As long as we are off the boycott now, Dan, on Twitter, I will send you faxes now around the world, I think, now this period.
Jan Agerfjordtoft, as always, thank you very much. Just a reminder, check out over on our website. We count down the top 10 players, 21 and under, no surprise, asserting Erling Haaland in at number one.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Inter one step closer to winning the title. In fact, if Atalanta don't win on Sunday, then Antonio Conte's side will be crowned Italian champions. As well as that 2-0 victory over Crotone, the other result of note, Milan with a 2-0 victory over Benevento today to very much keep alive their hopes of qualifying for the Champions League. Mina Rizzucchi joins us. Mina, let's start with Inter, who are just a complete machine at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's 18 games in a row now, which they haven't lost. They show this great capacity to overcome every hurdle they're faced. And people keep accusing them of not playing this entertaining brand of football. But Antonio Conte is not there to entertain you. He's there to cancel out the dynasty he started at Juventus and lift a trophy with Inter. And they're doing so by sticking by the principles that, you know, he's famous for, which is a strong defense, excellent movements up front by the players that he invested in and cared about, like Romelu Lukaku. But it was the changes he made that really made the difference against Crotone. And of course, Christian Eriksen. And it almost seems like rather amazing that the player that he couldn't really shift and had to adapt to is the player that has made such a difference to them in the second half of the campaign. Because he's injected so much quality into that midfield. And since they found their rhythm, Inter have really been unstoppable.
The Eriksen story is quite a fascinating one, Mina, because as you say, kind of came in, was rejected. Conte very much turned his back on him and in the end was just kind of stuck with him. So then did he start to invest more time, more in the player? Or was it just a fact that fate meant that Eriksen had to come in at some stage and when he did, he impressed him?
I think, well, even the run-up to Christmas, there was just talks of, you know, Beppe Marotta, who is, you know, sporting director, saying at the time, he just doesn't fit into the style that Antonio Conte likes, into the play that Inter are adopting. And of course, they found that they couldn't really shift him. The market wasn't available and they couldn't really bring in the type of players that Conte really did want. And he's somebody who's not going to sell if he's not going to have someone else. He'd rather just have a packed bench. And he started talking about playing him in a deeper role and saying, actually, he can be a great director for us, which is something he had already said he would never do with Eriksen. And so he did try that. And then eventually, Arturo Vidal got injured. Eriksen comes in. He manages that wonderful free kick in the Coppa Italia against Milan. And it was almost like after that, it was really hard on Antonio Conte to say, actually, I'm not going to play you in the next game, but thank you so much for that wonderful free kick. So it was almost like he had to play him and then started realizing, actually, he had improved defensively. He is starting to give them a little bit more of an unpredictable edge in midfield. He worked well with Brozovic and Barella. And eventually, I guess it was a case of, well, I've got to work with him. And he has a lot of quality. And I think that that's how it almost panned out for him. But it was almost lucky because I don't think otherwise Antonio Conte would have tried with him.
What do you think Inter would prefer, Mina? Atalanta drop points on Sunday and it's done and dusted, or to beat Sampdoria next weekend and kind of claim it themselves?
I think for Conte, he would prefer to win it himself than have to rely on anyone. And he kept saying, you know, we got to this point because we haven't relied on anyone, because of our hard work. And I think that it's an interesting point that they have the day off tomorrow, even though they've already started their Scudetto celebrations. It's all over the internet. They've gone crazy with it. But for them, it's, we're not going to be watching the Atalanta game together. We'd rather be able to win this title on the pitch all together and having managed to get another win under our belts. And you know, when it comes to Inter, they're capable of it.
Meanwhile, as I mentioned, a huge win for Milan, especially considering back-to-back defeats going into today's game. All that pressure of being talked about as title contenders, and then all of a sudden you're talking about maybe them not making the top four. This was a big show of character today.
Yeah, and I also think that it's interesting that it's when Ibrahimovic is back on the pitch, right? So he obviously wasn't available, and those losses to Sassuolo and Lazio, like you mentioned, they were under a huge amount of pressure. But Benevento, they are a good team in the sense that tactically they are well arranged and well assembled. Pippo Inzaghi has done a good job with what he has. I think they're quite a courageous side. They're not just happy to sit back and park the bus. But the truth of the matter is that they just don't have very much quality in the final third. So it's always half chances. Of course, those half chances turn into a win against Juventus, but you can't always be so lucky. And with Milan, with Ibrahimovic back on the pitch, was constantly creating up front and only faced with a great goalkeeper in Montipo that stopped them from really scoring the goals that probably would have made this a really difficult scoreline for Benevento to swallow. But I really do think leadership up front, somebody who has that quality in the final third that Ibra does, it makes a difference to a side like Milan, especially when you have so many youngsters that can sometimes just be a little bit inconsistent.
Not the result, obviously, that Napoli or indeed Juventus wanted to see play out. Juve against Udinese tomorrow, Mina.
Yeah, and Udinese have already come out kicking, saying, you know, we're going to be aggressive, we're going to go for this. And they are a side that know how to hassle the big boys. They defend extremely well. We know that when it comes to Juventus, they haven't exactly been unpredictable up front. And judging by the way that Pirlo's handled these last few games, I'm not entirely sure he knows what his best team is, how to adjust at the right times on a tactical level. So I think this is going to be huge. As for Cagliari, well, they've started to show what we know Semplici has always been great at, which is really revolutionizing a team. And when he walked in, there wasn't much change. And now you're seeing them win all those games, a great win against Roma. They're going to put Napoli under a lot of pressure, and they've got Nainggolan back. But Napoli are also in great form. So maybe at the end of all of this, it will be Juventus that will miss out. But it's going to be probably one of Juve, Milan or Napoli that miss out. And that's huge. It's a huge team that's not going to be in the top four.
Yeah, it's, of course, Juventus against Milan next weekend. What a match that is going to be with regards to the top four. Mina, as always, thank you very much. More Mina, of course, available along with Nikki and Matteo on the latest edition of the Serie Awesome podcast. Go over to the website. You can download that now. That's it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. And thank you, of course, for watching. We will be back tomorrow for more. Until then, goodbye.